Live from the HananiaAutos.com studio.
Live.
This is the Gus Bradley Show.
Gus Bradley Show.
Jaguars head coach Gus Bradley and former Jaguar Jeff Loggeman are brought to you by Ticket Exchange and by Everbank. The Gus Bradley Show begins right now.
Welcome into the Gus Bradley Show. Jeff Loggeman alongside the head coach Gus Bradley. And we'll be talking some football tonight. What has been on the television set all week long on CNN and Fox News and everything else.
Let's talk football. You're,
Hi, Joe. You're a diehard political guy, aren't you?
You know, I know what's going on, so I know you're heavily involved in the conversations that we've had, but I'd rather talk football.
It's amazing, though, that reading some of the news and the notes around the National Football League this week, how many reporters, interviewers want to ask, you know, head coaches and players political questions.
I know our players have some strong views, you know, just in conversation before meetings, or, you know, they come up and ask me, Gus, who'd you vote for? And, you know, and you hear conversations among position groups, and they have some very strong feelings. So, but you know what, once we get back in the meetings, they kind of put it aside. But when they get that idle time in the locker room, it's quite a conversation.
Yeah, I think the locker room sometimes when it comes to politics can be a pretty unique place. Because, you know, views can be shared, and then after those views are shared, sometimes loudly, it's all good. We're on the same team.
Right. It's probably, you know what, all the same guys, too. So there's a lot of guys over there listening from the corner, you know, from a distance, and then the guys that are have their strong opinions and done a lot of research into it, you know, you get their views as well.
Yeah. Interesting dynamic. All right, let's talk some football. Let's go back to Kansas City. -4, that's the number that really stands out. You know, you could almost consider it -5 if you considered the punt return with the Carson Tinker hole, because it ended up being a loss of field position right there, wasn't it?
Right. Well, their average starting field position was, you know, in the 40-yard line, you know, to start out again. So that's, you know, that's not a good sign for us defensively and as a team. But, to have three turnovers all in our deep in our own end and to come out of that, I think they scored one touchdown. And then after that, we held them to field goals. But, you know, we still had our chance, even with all those turnovers, to have the ball in a situation like we did. We could go down and score and get the win.
Impressive.
Yeah, it just really hit the team more, just how important it is to be on the plus side of that turnover ratio.
Yeah, and you guys actually had a 3.1% chance of winning. The numbers, I mean, when you guys study in the offseason the effect of turnovers, and I got the numbers. Yeah, I think since 2001, let me make sure I get it accurately. Since 2001, there was 259 games played in the National Football League, regular season and playoffs. 8 games were won by the team that had that -4 turnover differential. The other 251, the team that had the -4 lost, which computes to a 3.1% chance of winning. I mean, a lot of people talk about keys to the game. You always have to start with turnover differential for the number one key.
Well, I mean, if there's any signs up in our team meeting room, it's all about the ball and how important it is. And it's decision-making. It's, how you hold the ball, you know, how you hold it in high regard. And it goes to quarterback, receivers, returners, you know, even defensive players, how important it is for them. So, yeah, you know, I know when you talk about, you know, being down 4, but even if you're up +1, you know, the tide really can change, and it gives you a great advantage to winning the game.
And it's almost exponential, isn't it? You know, once you move one turnover one way or the other, the percent of winning or losing, it's not like it stays incrementally the same. It jumps high.
It does. There's big percentage points. And you can look at other factors, third down, explosive plays, you know, over 100 yards rushing. But without a doubt, the greatest variable, the greatest factor in a game is the turnover ratio.
Boy, offensively, first game out of the blocks for Nathaniel Hackett, 449 yards of offense, 205 yards rushing, 14 points scored, though. I mean, that's your issue there. You didn't get enough points, but you had to be happy with how the offense moved the ball consistently series in and series out.
Well, yeah, that part of it. I think the run game is so important because it really helps out Blake. It helps out the quarterback because now that defense now has got some decisions to make. Are they going to defend the run? Are they going to defend and the pass. And you saw it, the number of explosive plays that showed up, both run and pass, was elevated because of it. So that's the important part of it, because if you do get an explosive play in a drive, your percentage of scoring goes up. Again, just like the turnover ratio. So, you know, that part was good. But you're right. The number of points, you know, to have 14 points, we still need to be talking about, you know, in the 20s. And, you know, that's where we need to get to.
Yeah, the thing that I was very happy to see early in the ball game, and I always keep track, you know, a little chart here during the game. You know, the first drive was 6 plays. Second drive, 6 plays. The next one, 7 plays. He had an interception on the second play of the series. And then 6 plays, an 11-play drive at the end of the half. And then second half, he had the fumble by TJ, 5-play drive, 7-play drive, 5-play drive. You know, the three and outs, you know, you didn't have them.
Right, and that was good because the field position battle we knew going into the game was going to be big. And even the first drive that you're talking about, I think we got it close to the 50 and we punted it and got them
27 yards on that drive.
You know, so, you know, even when you can change a field position like that and get them backed up, and now the defense needs to stand up. Special teams, hold them backed up right there on a return. Defense come out. Let's get, at least a three and out and or get the ball on a turnover and give the offensive advantage of starting on a shorter field. And that's really what we are trying to accomplish in there. It just worked to the reverse where they had their opportunities because of field position and turnovers.
First time out for Nate. Do you call him Nate or Nathaniel?
Nathaniel is what he goes by. Sometimes I call him Nate, but okay. You know, everybody calls him
I just want to make sure I got that right. So Nathaniel Hackett, first game out of the gate.
Right.
Play calling. You know, a lot of people like to play, you know, the judge of a play caller. Thought he did a pretty good job.
He did. You know what? And I think we had a good plan offensively going into the game. Again, you saw chances where it was off schedule. And that, by what I mean is that if we had a good run, we followed up with another good run.
And sometimes the same exact run.
Yeah. You know, so I think that gets the defense off schedule a little bit. And, you know, I think for the offensive line, too, it takes pressure off of them. If they're going to throw in the ball, if we're going to throw the ball 45 times and the defensive line can pin their ears back, that puts a lot of pressure on the offensive line. So that balance is so important. And I thought that we really tried to stick to that.
Boy, and I was very, I don't want to say surprised, but a little different coming out of the gate. You know, you guys have personnel groupings that you use a numbering system, 11 personnel, 12 personnel, 22 personnel. First off, tell people what the numbers signify. If it's 11, is it back and then wide receiver?
Right.
Excuse me, back tight end, right?
Back and then tight end. So 21 personnel would be two backs, one tight end.
One tight.
It's in the game. 11 personnel, one back, one tight end.
And then 3 wide receivers. There's always five, right. Five total, you know, because you don't count the quarterback. So,
right.
But you came out of the gate in this game in 11 personnel and ran the ball.
Right. And, you know, I think every game can be different. Obviously, we've got some good personnel at the receiver position, the tight end position. So really based on what we feel like we can attack on their defense. You know, and sometimes that's going to be spread it out. Sometimes it's going to be 3 tight ends or 2 tight ends and get that extra tight end in there in the backfield. So it really depends on the game how we want to attack it. And this game, it just happened to be that we were going to be more than 11 personnel.
Well, I don't know if it was the spacing. Chris Ivory had a great day, you know, over 100 yards rushing. But when he got the ball, it was downhill, decisive, here I go.
Well, that's his strength, to be more of a downhill runner. And it doesn't mean that you can't run outside zone, you know, and stretch it out a little bit.
Yeah, the greatest play in the world might be an outside zone that is downhill.
Right, where he can get his foot stuck in the ground and then get north and south. So, you know, I just think that the flow, there was good rhythm to the plays. I think the offense really felt it. It allowed the quarterback, Blake, to get in a good rhythm. And then we had opportunities. We just had a couple plays that were off the fingertips. And, you know, that 4th and 1, you know, had an opportunity there. So there were plays to be made out there in that game. We just didn't make enough of them. And then the turnovers. You know, it sounds like a broken record already in our conversation, but that was such a big part of that game.
Well, you talk about the 4th and 1. That throw by Blake to Allen Hurns, excellent throw. He had some other throws in the ball game. The slant route to Marquise Lee, hitting TJ in stride for the touchdown pass. Julius Thomas on the first series, he hits him into the flat, and Julius continues to run, never breaks stride. Mercedes Lewis, he had some really nice throws like that, but then he also had a couple, the one where the linebacker ends up getting the interception,
right.
The one at the goal line where the safety should have had an interception, and then the underthrown ball that was nearly intercepted by Nelson, the cornerback. So you're like, good, but then.
Well, I think every quarterback in the league, you're going to see some of those if you take a look at the tape. But and I think, you know, Blake understands that even though Nathaniel was his quarterback coach, Nathaniel coached him with the philosophy under Greg Olsen. And now Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator, and now he might have some different objectives, some different things that he looked at that it's important to him, important to our team, that maybe wasn't under the same philosophy as Ole. So, you know, we've had, you know, Blake's had 5 days with Nathaniel as the offensive coordinator. This week was big. We've already seen great strides this week for him, and I think that just will continue to grow and be better for our team.
Well, Blake's numbers, 22 of 41, 252 yards, two touchdowns, interception, 78.5 rating. But the nice thing about that performance, besides the near interceptions, it looked like he was starting to find a little bit of a rhythm.
Yeah, I without a doubt. If you talk to Blake, he felt really comfortable in the style of offense. I think that, you know, he always will look at and wish he had a couple throws back. But just overall, how he felt coming out of the game, obviously we lost. That wasn't, that was the part that was disappointing. But then when you break down the game and get a chance to really analyze it, just felt like he had a chance to get into some rhythm, could see some of the receivers and the routes that they run. They're very precise. And just the overall flow of it. So now we have another couple of days of practice like we have. Let's add to it. You know, build on what we had last week and rise above where we were.
No, we go. Let's go back to the running game just for a minute, because there was a play and it sticks in my mind, and I'm going to use it on Film Room Friday on Jaguars.com. It was that read option look where Blake sticks it into Chris Ivory's stomach. He takes it, and then because he's a threat to run, the two backside linebackers, D Ford and the other guy, freeze just enough. And then on the front side, you got a combo block between Patrick Omame and Brandon Linder. And I bring this up because I thought Brandon Linder played a really good football game. And that play, I thought, really signified it, because he got the tackle that they were comboing on, him and Omame. The tackle ended up, defensive tackle ended up all the way, I think, like out to the wide receivers. Omame took him all the way out there. And then Linder goes up and gets second level with the linebacker. And I'm going, man, I mean, you know, Brandon Linder's been really good all year long, in my opinion. But I thought that game, I thought he took a step up.
He did. And that was the conversation we had as a coaching staff. Just we felt like he probably played his best game of the year. And, you know, it was overall, you know, the number of plays that we had. Now, each week that could vary. But I felt like we really pared down the run game and then got a lot of reps at it in practice based on the looks that we could see. So allowed the offensive line to be very aggressive, allow them to really work hard, get movement on the double teams, work up to the second level. We weren't seeing that earlier in the year. It was more maybe quantity of plays rather than quality and really get precise on it. So it puts a little bit more on the players, but I think they like that, the part that they know what they're going to get and allows them to play more aggressive.
Now, it's not like he was playing a substandard defensive tackle.
No.
I mean, we're talking about Don Terry Poe.
That's right. And, that you know, we challenged him in the meetings. You know, that was a matchup that we had to look at, and that was a call-out in the meetings, and he did really well.
All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll continue on to talk on the other side of the ball, the Jaguars' defense. And we'll do that right here on the Gus Bradley Show on the Jaguars Radio Network.
The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
You want to do this? You want to do the long card? You want me to?
Go ahead. You're the pro.
Join Coach Gus Bradley at the 7th Annual McKenzie's Run, a 5K run and walk, plus a one-mile fun run on November 19th at Everbank Field. See Jackson DeVille and the Roar, plus a fun after party with live music and games. Participants finish inside the stadium and appear on the world's largest video boards. The run benefits the Mackenzie Noel Wilson Foundation and their mission to help young people recognize their full potential. Visit mackenziesrun.org to register. That's a long one, but we got it in. Let's flip over to the other side of the ball in Kansas City defensively for you guys. Strong performance. Yeah, and a lot of people point to, well, the Kansas City Chiefs were missing a couple guys. Well, yeah, but you know what? Even if they're missing guys, the performance that your defense was able to put together as far as the yardage allowed, the points allowed, and the field position that was presented to your defense, I thought still a great job.
Yeah, you know what? Nick Foles was a guy they were talking about. We've seen him at his best, you know, when he does really good things. So we knew it was going to be a challenge with him. And, you know, just to keep him off schedule, I thought the big showing was on third down. You know, I think they were one of 14. And I thought we did a good job mixing up coverages and pressures on them. And, you know, they definitely came out to attack some of the things we've done previously on third down. We had a good change up for them. And, you know, I think it gave us a chance to start off. And at least in those field position changes that we had where it was a short field, we got some wins out of there and at least held them to a field goal opportunity.
Well, they came right out of the gate, tried to hit a little deep ball.
They did.
First play of the game.
You know what? You know, that's you know, they tried to get a matchup right there. We didn't get our hands on them right at the line of scrimmage. And it was a good throw and catch. But there's going to be those plays in the NFL. You know, they've got good personnel, good talent. And, you know, they move the ball at times, too.
231 yards allowed, 1 of 14 on third down, 0 for 3 in the red zone, which is a critical statistic given the field position that was allowed. And they only had 10 first downs. Here's the thing that makes it impressive to me. The previous 2 weeks, your offense has been struggling, and you could see that it affected, affected the defense, or it appeared to affect the defense because they're not getting rewarded. And in that game, to be able to continue to go out there with energy and effectiveness, I thought was impressive in a play that I talked to you about earlier in the week. When Chris Ivory fumbled on the goal line, and that was late in the game, and that was really an opportunity to get the ball rolling momentum-wise, but it also could have been an opportunity to deflate. And the defense, after that fumble goes out there, and I remember I wanted to watch this play right after the game because I remember it live, and I said, I got to watch this again on tape. And it was like a whiteout. It was a swarm by the defense in its entirety, running to the football, and it was an impressive drive because three plays, minus 5 yards for the Chiefs on that drive, and they had to punt. To me, that was impressive.
It was. You know, Kansas City is a very difficult place to play. I mean, at this time of year, you're going to have injuries throughout some, you know, some teams more than others. But to go into that environment, you know, a volatile environment, loud environment, a tough place to play, and go in there. And I felt like, other than the turnovers, which is a big part of it, but the offense and the defense and the special teams, it looked more like football, you know, with the offense running the ball, keeping it balanced, had some explosive plays, moved the ball, defense stopped them, got some opportunities, three and outs, forced some, you know, some field position deals for us where we could take advantage of it offensively. Special teams came in. I just felt like, you know, that was a game that we had some missed opportunities, and the turnovers came up. But, you know, where it started, you know, they played off of each other. The sideline was great, and it was tough. Just like you said, Logs, coming off that Thursday night game, how is this team going to rebound and show up? And without a doubt, they came out and played, and you know, really in all three phases.
Well, that the fumble by Chris Ivory, tough because, you know, if I had to give an educated guess, I would say he was across the goal line. But the call on the field was a fumble. The replays never showed anything that appeared to be definitive. And, you know, that has to make you kind of angry, you know, as head coach during, on the field because, you know, it looks like he was in.
Well, I think, you know what, you talk to your players about, you know, when you get close to the end zone, not to reach, you know, for the goal line. You know, not to reach for the pylon. A quarterback jumps over the pile to reach the ball out because some things can happen. It could be the sideline view. You might not get all the views, and they could tap it out. So, you know, it's critical. At that point in time, I can't fault Chris Ivory. He was on the ground. He was leaning. He saw it. And it was out of no other reason than the goal line's right there. I can get it across. Let's get this touchdown. Let's not put us in a situation where we got to run it again. And, you know, they just didn't see it. So, you know, but again, it goes back to making good decisions. But, you know, it's almost like you overtry. You overtry at times, and that's what happened on some of our fumbles that we had where, you know, they made some good plays, some good hits. But I think for us to have that mindset, do the things we're capable of doing, do the ordinary things very well.
Well, and it could be that play right there could be a great lesson for your defense. You know, I mean, here's a play that appears to almost be in the end zone, if not in the end zone. Take a shot at the ball. Don't ever give up at the goal line. You don't know what's going to happen.
Well, that's the defensive mentality. As always, give us an inch and we'll protect it. You know, just give us a blade of grass. And if that's on the goal line, let's take advantage of this time. And like you said, hopefully get a turnover.
Well, Avery Jones, I thought, played a really good football game.
Well, he's had a difficult position. I mean, how can you step in and replace a guy like Roy Miller? That's tough duty. But Avery has played well. I think, you know, with the, you know, we're doing some rotations there with Avery and Cinderic Marks in there. But Avery's been playing very well. He played well for us last year. And, you know, it's a big challenge to fill those shoes, but he's playing very consistent football for us.
Yeah, I love the play where he was double teamed on a pass rush and the ball is thrown down the field. He turns, runs, and does the belly tackle.
Well, you know what? We call them stack monsters. You know, you got to have guys that will come out of a stack, turn and go, and those hits that are unexpected. Where, you know, receiver catches the ball, doesn't see it come, a running back, because that's where you get some turnovers. And I know exactly the play you're talking about. He turned and ran, came out of the stack, made a big hit in the play, and you see great effort plays like that from Avery.
Well, and Dante had one just as well, fullback. Double team, peels around, gets a great hit on the fullback.
Well, and Dante, too, he played one of his better games, too. He's playing with a high motor, that effort that he's doing. He's getting a feel for these tackles that he's going against. So, you know, a defense that continues to play with a lot of energy.
All right, well, let's take a break. We're going to eventually open up the phone lines, 904-355-6351 or outside the calling area, 1-800-355-NFL1. And we'll get to your calls right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And this segment is brought to you by Beard's Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Back with the head coach, Gus Bradley, Jeff Logman alongside right here. And the Everbank Field this Sunday. Houston Texans coming to town with a 5-3 record. And this is a salute to service game. And this is a Navy town, so it should be an exciting day.
It will be. I know we were just talking to JP earlier about Matt Smiley coming in here. You know, had a career in the military, and now he's coaching with us. And, you know, to have conversations with him about some of his background and some of his experiences, and then live in a military city like we have here, so fortunate and so appreciative of the so many people that are involved in our military.
Yeah, pretty neat. The 5,000 tickets have been provided from the Jaguars alongside corporate individual donors, the USO. So they've got the retired reservist military personnel and their families coming to the game on Sunday. Going to have a pregame performance with live music. The Navy Southeast Band, or Navy Band Southeast, will be on hand to do the pregame stuff, a little flyover and all that kind of stuff. So it should be fun.
Yeah, you know, and our players, they've done a great job. The Jags have just to give some direction for our players, and they've gone out to the bases this week a couple times and have gotten involved. And I know they came back and had a great time doing it.
Yeah, I know. Someone went to NAS. Someone went to Mayport. The ones who were at Mayport were bowling.
Yeah.
I think it was
I saw pictures. T.J. Yeldon was out there and in bowling. You know, he claims to be a
Malik
a great
was
bowler.
There. I think so Malik was there as well, yeah. Doing a little bit of bowling. That's always a lot of fun. The Texans 2-0 in the South. And Bill O'Brien, I guess he's now calling plays. Is that right? He's the play caller
well,
for the Texans?
Well, they talked about that. I think it's still George is doing it. You see, you know, you get the video and you're looking at it. I think they went back and forth on it. But I think it's kind of a mutual deal. But you see on the sidelines some things that tell us a different story.
And I think the one thing, because when all of that kind of came up, Brock Osweiler was throwing the ball a lot. And then when Bill O'Brien said, I'm going to call the plays, or at least he said that publicly, the play calling changed to be a lot more run. And even if George Godsey, who is the named offensive coordinator, is calling the plays, I think the directive was understood at that point because they've got a free agent running back, Lamar Miller. I think he's sixth in the National Football League in rushing yards. He's a really good player. And they've got a developing quarterback, even though he's in his fifth year, and they want to run the football.
Yeah, you know what? Sometimes when you sign a free agent quarterback, there's that, okay, let's see who we have. And just like the running game, it takes some time to get that developed and get that going. And I think, too, with their quarterback, okay, who is he? Is he a guy that we depend on? Are we throwing 40 times a game? Are we going to try to keep it balanced? So as they get a feel for that, you know, during the season, you know, now they're starting to get an identity. You know, Miller, what a great pickup he is, just like you said. Very explosive back, makes people miss. And, you know, I think that's what they're trying to find out even closer to their offense identity.
Well, when people talk about Brock Osweiler, the first thing they want to talk about is money. I mean, you know, he's making $17 million a year. He's got to be better, right? You know, but you look at the numbers. He started 7 games for the Broncos last year. And that was the first 7 games he ever started in his career, I believe. And so this game, this weekend, will be his 16th career start,
Well, you know, people aren't patient when it comes to the quarterback. When you, you know, put that kind of money into a quarterback and bring him in, the expectations grow. And, you know, I think he's a guy that they have great faith in. Just listen to their conversations and to see it on tape. You see him make some great throws. And, you know, everybody wants more. I'm sure their coaching staff does this as well. But, you know, we just know that, you know, they'll be patient with him and he can't have a big game. Let's not have him have a big game on Sunday against us. So, you know, we're going the game recognizing the threats and the ability he has.
No, he's got some great weapons. The guy that obviously I think is recognized around the National Football League, DeAndre Hopkins. Career numbers. He's in his fourth year. 279 catches, 3,967 yards, 22 touchdowns, and most of those categories are on pace to break Andre Johnson's numbers in his first 4 years. That's pretty impressive.
Well, I mean, he can really change the outcome of a game. He can make big plays for you. He can make explosive plays. And he's, you know, not only you can have awareness of where he is, but that's not enough. You know, I think that's where you see some teams on tape. You know, they double coverage him, they bracket coverage. You know, they're doing a wide variety of things to try to take him out of the game because he is such a big threat for him. And but it's still difficult. He's got, you know, great talent, and they find ways to get him the ball.
Jalen Ramsey, be his shadow a little bit in this
game? Well, I mean, we've done it different every week. You know, I think Jalen feels comfortable on the left side. You know, that's where he's at. So, you know, we'll move him around, and there'll be a lot of guys that get an opportunity to cover him.
So, in other words, you're not telling me.
Well,
you shouldn't.
I just got done telling you.
And he's got another – there's another wide receiver on the other side, Will Fuller. First-round pick, I got to say. He's from Notre Dame. Tim Walsh on the Jaguar staff would want me to say that. And for the first two games of the season, he had 100-yard games.
Right. Well, and that's just it. When you have two really good wide receivers like that, and then, again, it's matchups, and, you know, those things are important. But they have different styles, and Will Fuller's got, you know, great speed on the perimeter. So I think it's important that we understand who's in the game and what their strengths are and then how they utilize those strengths.
And he's got a little bit of a knee injury. He's been on the injury report the last couple of days, so hopefully it slows that speed down a little bit.
Well, you know, we just take it that we're going to get two guys that are 100%.
All right, well, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. We'll open the phone lines up. If you'd like to get in, 904-355-6351 locally or outside the calling area, 1-800-355-NFL1. That's also NFL1 is 6351, by the way. And we'll be back right here with the head coach right here on the Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And welcome back to the Gus Bradley Show. And the Texans come into town with a defense that's a little bit different. Namely, there's no J.J. Watt, which that's not a bad thing. The NFL's best defensive player, arguably. And he was on injury reserve. Third game of the season was his last. He had a back injury. He's now on injury reserve. And it was interesting because when the Texans now have their depth chart, they have Jadeveon Clowney listed in his spot on the depth chart as a left defensive end. And when I was filling out my board, I'm going, okay, and I do the board before I watch the film. And then you watch the film, he plays a little bit of J.J. spot, but then he's moved all over the place.
Well, they did that with J.J. too. You know, they moved him all over. I mean, inside to outside to on the right side to the left side. And it was really put a lot of strain on the defense. So, you know, now with Clowney in there, he's taking some of that personality, and they're moving him around. But, boy, still up front, they're very talented up front, provide a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So it's so important that we protect.
And in I always have to make sure I say this right. Whitney Merciless. Sometimes I want to say Merciless Whitney, but it's Whitney Merciless. You know how I remember that, by the way? Whitney is merciless. Right? Sounds better that way.
However, you know, Logs, everybody's got their own way.
He's a heck of a football player. I think it's 34. I want to make sure I get this right. 34 and a half career sacks. He's got 16 and a half sacks in the last 19 regular season games. I know, you know, when he was young, he was trying to still kind of figure it out. Looks like he's got to figure it out now.
You know what? They do a good job up front. They get great pressure. When you look at it in the secondary and the back end, when they're doing very good against the pass, you look right away to their front. Is it because their front is getting great pressure? And they do. But their back end is playing really good tight coverage. So I think it's a combination of both. You talk about rush and coverage. You know, for us, we're doing pretty good against the pass, but we're not getting a lot of sacks. quarterbacks. And that's when you look at teams and say, how are they doing it? So you know both in the front end and the back end, they're playing at a high level right now, and they're working really well together.
You know, it's surprising. They're the number two team in the National Football League against the pass, but they've got six takeaways. You know, you guys have five. They have six. So it's surprising that they, you know, you talk about rush cover and effective rush, but yet they only have six takeaways.
Well, again, you know, they're getting some three and outs, and they're doing a good job to get their offensive ball. Time of possession's a factor. You know, so there's a lot of variables that go into it. And sometimes with turnovers, you know, you can get hot in games. You know, they come in bunches, and like we've said multiple times, and I think that you just really stick to it. They're playing very good defense on the, like I said, in the back end and with their rush.
All right, well, let's open up phone lines here, and let's go talk to Eric in Mandarin this evening. Good evening, Eric.
Hey, good evening, Jeff. Good evening, Coach.
Hey, how you doing, Eric?
I'm doing well, sir. I have to ask you, Coach, I've noticed it several times, the most apparent, most egregious, in my opinion, is when it's 3rd and 10+, specifically in the Bears game when it was 3rd and 17, and I noticed this pattern. You guys move toward more of a prevent defense, and I kind of wanted to know the philosophy behind that. Why not pressure? Why concede the 35 yard field goal? Why not make them gain the yards to go? What is the philosophy behind?
Well, I think every game is different, but you're right. I think two parts of that game that I look back as far as for us as coaches that really stand out to me as a head coach.
The Chicago game.
No, I'm talking about this one, this previous
Kansas City
game. Yeah. Was the 4th and 1 play. You know, we took a shot right there. We're on the 30-yard line, have a chance to kick a field goal. If we kick a field goal there, make it at the end of the game, a chance to kick a field goal to win the game. So, you know, those situations. And then also the one that he's talking about where it was long yardage, and we played with a kind of a two-deep principle, but the difference was we took our linebackers and they moved back. And they threw a screen pass and they got, 18 yards or whatever it was, and it put them in field goal position. To be more aggressive there, the style of play, we had a misfit. Still, they would have had 8 or 9 yards and still would have put them in field goal range. It's a good question now. You can pressure there. You can go attack them. You can play man coverage. We've done a variety of things. We had a backed-up situation against, Oakland. If you remember right, and they ran the ball against a tight coverage man deal, and they ended up getting out of a backed-up situation. So it's a great question, and I know exactly the one he's talking about with Chicago, too. And you can do a variety of things. Now, you can pressure, you can play tight coverage, but to pick up on that, I can't argue that point. You know, I think the big one that stood out to me was the Kansas City one, because it was such a close game. We felt like, you know what, if we would have held them out of field goal position, played a little bit more aggressive, forced them to punt, it could have had an impact on the game.
Yeah, the one thing I remember about the play is that, if I remember right, the alignments on the snap were deep. And a lot of people sometimes can interpret that, okay, the linebackers are lining up deep. It's a prevent defense. Necessarily indicate that it's a prevent defense.
No, you can, because you can show deep and then walk up and play tight coverage and you know, give the illusion some different things. You know, with our linebackers, we had a chance to keep that to to where it would be a long field goal situation, and with a fit up with the screen, and really with our defensive lineman, the style of play that it was. You know, we call it a Wally screen. The defensive lineman could feel it and play the back, and it's for no gain. There's some factors in there that we look at, that coaching, that it shouldn't have been that big of a play as far as both players. And we could have helped out with, you know, getting the linebackers up a little bit tighter as well.
Yeah, 5-point game. You know, 3 points means a lot.
That's right.
Especially at the end of the game. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show, and we'll take some more of your calls on the other side, 904-355-6351 or 1-800-355-6351 to get in right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
And continues along with the head coach, Gus Bradley, and me, Jeff Loggeman, and the injury report, Gus, this week. You know, the Texans coming off of a bye should be pretty healthy. They've got a couple players that did not practice. Brian Peters, Vince Wilfork, the big nose tackle that played a long time for the New England Patriots. Lonnie Ballantyne is safety. Jalen Strong has an ankle, did not practice. But you guys, two guys that did not practice today, Chris Smith, Brian Walters, Alan Hearns in the concussion protocol but was limited today. any chance of, or is this one of those things where, hey, you have no idea with the concussion
protocol? Well, I think they're at different levels, and you're right, we won't know. I mean, they're different stages of the concussion protocol, and even though they might pass the first two, they may not the third stage. So, you know,
it's so there's just three things that they've got to.
Yeah, there's it can go for 4 or 5 days now, yeah. You know, before they get through everything, and some of them, depending on where they were at the beginning of the week. But we'll just have to wait and see. You're right, Hearnsey took one step, but keep your fingers crossed and see where he is at tomorrow.
Everybody else limited Miles Jack. I remember the play to where it looks like it, you know, I know he's on the injury report with a hip, and I'm assuming this happened in a game. He was chasing a guy to your sideline. It kind of gets up a little bit slow, and I know the reports came from the sideline that he had a hip or something during the game. Is he going to be okay? Is he
I think, you know, we were smart with him as far as yesterday, and then today he got a few more reps. I think he's coming out of it now pretty good. You know, we'll see. I think tomorrow will be big for our guys, even though it's a walkthrough, just to see how they responded to today's practice.
The Monday night football game, Seattle-Buffalo. Did you get a chance to watch a little bit of that?
You know what? I heard about it, and we always go back, and every game we look at the calls that were made, mm-hmm. you know, and the situations that came up. So I got a chance to see some of the situation that took place right before the half.
Yeah, and I'm sure that you wanted to see that because, I mean, as a head coach or coach, period, can probably learn a lot from the circumstances that happened there at the end of the half.
You always do. I think every week we spend time looking at all the situations that take place. And you know, we have a paper copy of what we would do in that situation, a video copy, just so we can go through it. And, you know, you always have to stay up. There's so many situations that can present themselves, and it's kind of a library full of them that you just, you know, bank on those experiences to use if it happens in a game.
Yeah, that was a strange kind of thing. I'm sitting there watching, and all of a sudden, you know, Richard Sherman is offsides. He hits the kicker as he's trying to kick. They call a offsides was all they called. And then Buffalo lines up to spike. And, you know, then it's debatable whether they can actually even spike there because right. Their kicker had to be pulled out for a place. Debatable whether they are even allowed to spike it.
Yeah, you really can't tell. You can't spike it unless the clock's moving.
Unless the clock is running. That should have been right. Called intentional grounding.
Right.
And then they got the delay of game call.
I think they said the whole play, I think, took something like 25 minutes.
It was unbelievable.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, there's, like, you know, that situation, you know, that's something that hasn't showed up before, or hasn't in a couple of years at least. And when you take a look at it, you have to kind of process everything that took place. A lot of emotion, you know, took place in that play. I know we felt it the week before, some of the things that showed up in the game. And you can get caught up, and I think the officials do a really good job. But there's those situations that come up that, you know, in the middle of the game, it kind of stimulates your emotions.
Kind of crazy. And you know, of course, then once that happens the next day, should NFL officials be full-time? You know, that's always the thing that comes up. If there's something that happens, should the officials go full-time? I don't see there's a need to. I think those guys do a great job. For the most part, they do a great job.
Well, I think anytime that you can enhance the game, you know, the product, and, you know, so I think there's varied opinions. You know, for us, you know, to have a chance where official can be full-time and they study it throughout the year, it gives us a chance to have more at OTAs, to have more at training camp.
So you like the idea
of full-time. Yeah, I do like the idea to have them full-time, you know, and as far as, you know, if it's all of them or whatever the case is. But I know it's something that we'll look at, but I would be in favor of it.
Okay. Interesting. All right, let's take a break here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll talk a little division and where the division is right now with the head coach, Gus Bradley, right here on Jaguars Radio Network.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Jeff Logman alongside the head coach. Here on the Gus Bradley Show in the division, Gus, Texans, the leaders coming in here at 5-3. The Titans fall to 4-5. Colts 4-5. You guys are at 2-6. And the Texans at 5-3, when you look at them as a football team, I mean, besides some of the play of the pass rushers on the edge, I don't think you look at their football team and go, wow, that really scares us.
Well, I think their defense is, you know, is obviously playing at a very high level. I think they're a team that, you know, with their pass rush and their secondary and their linebackers is very strong. I think their run game is solid. I think if they get that going, they have over 100 yards rushing, they win. You know, so they're a team that can put it together at any time. Obviously, you look at their team, there's a lot of first-round type players, a lot of talent, and they can get it together at any time. So it's an important game for us in many ways. Important because it's at home. It's an AFC South division opponent. We're 1-1 right now, have a chance to go to 2-1 in our division. And they're coming into our house. You know, so a lot of cool things could take place here this weekend.
Counting this game, you've got four division games left. An opportunity still to have a winning record in the division. I mean, you talked for the last couple of years about owning the division.
Right.
That opportunity is still there.
Right, and that's, you know, as we talk about that as a team. You know, we go through the whole division. You got Tennessee, you got Indy, you got Houston. To come out of that 2-1, you know, after the first round, you know what? And it's not what we'd want. We'd like to be undefeated, but we have a chance to be 2-1. So let's take advantage of this time. And it's at home in front of our fans. So, like I said, our players understand the realm of it. They understand the AFC South division, where it's at, where we need to be. And, you know, this is where we got to start.
And one way to accomplish that, takeaways. Takeaways and protect the football. To go all the way back to what we talked about at the very beginning of the show.
Well, just to be plus.
You know, yeah, be plus.
And, you know, if it's whether we don't turn the ball over on offense and we get one or two or
three. How many games this year on the plus side?
You know what? Not enough. Yeah. You know, and look at it. That's what happens when you're, you know, as far as the defensive turnovers, the Baltimore game, I think we did a good job getting the ball for the offense. Just didn't take advantage of it. So I really look for us offensively, defensively, special teams. I felt like we played together as a team with all units kind of in sync. And I think that we need to take another step this week. And, you know, that's really what the team's focus is.
All right, well, let's take a break right here on the Gus Bradley Show. When we come back, we'll continue to talk with the head coach and talk about some bison right here on the Gus Bradley Show on Jaguars Radio.
Welcome back to the HananiaAutos.com studio. The Gus Bradley Show continues right now.
Last segment here on the Gus Bradley Show, and Gus, midpoint of the season. And, you know, there's a lot of people that we talk about on this show, a lot of players that get talked about, you know, in your press conferences. But, you know, at the midway point of the season, if there was a player that you would have to say would be a surprise player, and maybe not surprise, but you're very happy with at this point of the season that maybe you weren't expecting, but you've gotten more, what player would that be? That people don't really, you know, that doesn't jump out at people.
I mean, there's so many. I think Jonathan Cyprian, you know, is playing pretty well. I think the move to get him closer to the line of scrimmage has been a great move for him. I think guys like Telvin and Puz, you know, Puz, you say, well, Puz, no, that's, but look at the year he's had. But I think probably overall when you look at a guy like Marquise Lee,
yeah,
you know, he's a guy that I think people didn't know what he was going to provide, how he's going to come back. I mean, he was the albino tiger. He you know, a lot of people didn't know what he could provide. And I'm just really happy for him. I think for him, he's in a good place right now. I think he competes his tail off, not only in practice, but in games. So I think overall, you know, I'm very pleased where he's at.
If you had to take him out of the equation and focus in on one guy that's performing well on special teams, because it's not like you have a core four of special teams that you knew coming back into the season who's played very well on special teams.
Well, I think Brad Nortman, you know, when we look at him, you know, as a punter, the number of punts he's gotten inside the 20, and, you know, it comes back to specialists. Obviously, there's guys that have done a good job in coverage and protection, but I think overall just Brad Nortman's done a very good job.
Yeah, he's done a great job. All right, let's take a look at the Bison. Victorious last week, 24-3 victory over Youngstown State in the Harvest Bowl.
So it was in North Dakota State. So they're probably on the road this week. Who they got?
No, did they ever play on the road?
No, maybe they had. I know South Dakota State they lost to. That was at home.
I should pull that up. I'll have to find. Next week we'll have the conversation of how many home games that the Bison have in a season, because it seems like they're at home every week.
Oh, I know. You know, just the crowd, and, you know, they'll play like Iowa, like they did, but any non-conference game is going to be at NDSU.
All right, this week, Indiana State, where are they? I mean, Indiana, obviously, but.
Right. That's Larry Bird's.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. They got a good football team?
Yeah, you know what? I think every year they're one of those teams that, you know, they have their swing like every couple of years. You see them where they're at the top of the league. So I'm not sure where they're at this year.
2:30 kickoff, that is not on ESPN. Kind of surprising. Like one of the first.
At least at ESPN 3 or ESPN 2.
Oh, yeah, so usually it's been on ESPN 3. The Virginia Cavaliers, very disappointing last week, had a loss to Wake Forest. They lost by a touchdown. And when I was at Virginia, it went under the old ACC. There was two teams that we never wanted to lose to, Duke and Wake Forest. That was just not allowable. You don't lose to Duke, and you don't lose to Wake Forest. And the Cavaliers, the mighty Cavaliers, lost to Wake Forest. This week, Miami Hurricanes.
Ooh, you got some Brandon Linder. Those guys will be. And Luke Bowenko, I'm sure there'll be some talking.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be plenty of that, but it's all in good fun. Gus, thank you very much. Okay, thanks, best of luck on Sunday. We'll talk to everybody next week right here on the Gus Bradley Show.